Hey everybody, if you don't know me, my name is AJ, my wife here is Liz, and as everybody knows, my parents are here too. Maybe you didn't actually. All right, I want you to put yourself in the place of the following character of Scripture as we begin. I go to the well at the hottest time of the day. You see, my reputation is not very good, and I don't want to run into anybody because I'm so sick of the condescending stares and the way people are looking at me like they are right now. So I go at high noon, the time people don't want to come, so I'm getting water, and I'm surprised when this man comes, and he's a Jewish man, and he says to me, "Would you draw me water?" Well, I say to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, would ask me, a Samaritan, for water?" You see, I understood that a Jewish man would hardly talk to his wife, let alone another woman in public. And more or less me, a Samaritan, whom he looked at as a half-breed. And then he said the most curious thing to me. He said, "If you only knew who I am, you would ask me, and I would give you living water." And you know, I didn't quite know what to say, so I said to him, "Are you greater than our father Jacob?" And he said to me, "Man, I can give you water to where you will never thirst again." I said to that man, "Give me that water." And he said to me, "Go get your husband." Well, I said, I have no husband, which is sort of the truth, but sort of a lie. And then I was quite blown away when the man said, "The truth is you have had 5 husbands, and the man that you are living with right now is not your husband." At that moment, I'm telling you, a flood of failure came over my soul. Every marriage, every wedding, every rejection, and I hear this brought before me. But there's something different about him. There's something about his tone of voice that's not condemning but inviting. And I didn't quite know what to say, but I knew I wanted to change the subject. So I said to him, "You seem to be a very religious guy. Could you help with this debate we're having around here? Do we have to go back to Jerusalem to worship, or are we able to worship here on Mount Gerizim?" Well, he said to me, "Ma'am, there's a day coming where it won't matter where you worship, it's how you worship, and it's in spirit and in truth." And I didn't know what was going on here, so I just sort of offhandedly said, "You know, when the Messiah comes, I'm sure you guys will get all this straightened out." And I've never been so shocked in my life as when that man looked at me in the eye and said, "I am the Messiah." The truth is, I left my water jar there, and I've never had to go back and get it again. This is John chapter 4, the woman at the well. As Jesus encounters this woman in Samaria, in the middle of the Samaritan country, there's a discussion, a teachable moment that happens here, that Jesus is able to share with his disciples as well. And if you have your Bible, turn to John chapter 4. It's about verse 27 when they show back up and Jesus has a chance to talk to them. Because not only is this woman shocked that Jesus has talked to him, his disciples are. His disciples were even a bit offended that Jesus was talking to her. Just then in verse 27, his disciples return and were surprised to find him talking to this woman. But no one asked him, "What do you want?" or "Why are you talking to this woman?" You think maybe by now they learned not to ask those kind of questions to him? Then, leaving her water jar, the woman went back to town and told the people, "Come see a man who told me everything that I ever did." And she's not saying this negatively. "Come see a man who told me everything I did. Could this be the Messiah?" They came out of town and made their way toward him. And meanwhile, his disciples urged him, saying, "Rabbi, eat something." But he said to them, "I have food to eat that you know nothing about." Well, the disciples are no doubt confused. "We left you at the beginning of this chapter, Jesus. You sent us to get food. And now we come back and you're saying that you have food to eat that we know nothing about." The disciples must have been asking each other questions like, "Did someone bring him food? Does he have an extra stash somewhere that we don't know about? Did he go through the drive-thru? Did he order out?" I mean, what's happened here? I love verse 34. "My food," said Jesus, "is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work." You guys recognize what's going on here? Jesus has encountered this woman, and he has seen her problems, her baggage, and he is connected with her. Jesus is pumped up. In fact, there is only 2 words I want you to remember today from this message. The first word is passion. Next slide there. Yeah. Would you say it with me? Passion. Can we say it with some passion here? Ready? Passion. Yep. Jesus had a lot of passion. Can you hear it in his voice? He's looking at his disciples and say, I don't need your food anymore. I don't need it. I'm so worked up about this that I'm fired up that I'm not even feeling hungry anymore. And it's amazing. John chapter 1, Jesus has called his disciples, his first disciples, and they're not too sharp of a group. John chapter 2, he's gone to the Holy of Holies, the temple, and it's a joke, it's a travesty, and he runs them out. John chapter 3, he encounters Nicodemus, a member of the Sanhedrin, the leading spiritual men of the day, and Nicodemus can't seem to comprehend what it means to be born again. And then here in John chapter 4, in the middle of what Jews would say is God-saken Samaria, Jesus has encountered this woman and she is connecting with Jesus, and Jesus is full of passion. Do you see Jesus' passion? Today we need that passion that Jesus has here. We've got passion. Maybe I need to say we've got passion. We need to reword that in the, we need passion in the right things. I don't know about you, but sometimes I get passionate about the wrong things, really. We got a lot of big football fans here, right? Show of hands, maybe. Yes, no, yeah. We got a few of them. I'm a big football fan, and there's a story about this preacher. When our teams were doing really good, we're excited, we're on our feet, we're hoorahing about it and everything. And one preacher was watching a football game. His team was coming back from way behind, and they scored the winning touchdown, and he was jumping up and down, hugging his friends, going crazy. Maybe not what people think a preacher should be doing, but he was still doing it nonetheless. Little did he know that his friend was videotaping this on his phone, and it had gone viral in his hometown. His friend is a big football fan too, and he decided he's going to show this in his Wednesday night class. He set it up real nice. Can you go to the next slide there? He says, we have such a wonderful preacher. He is such a spiritual preacher. I love our preacher. He's one of my best friends. And then he shows a picture of one of the recent baptisms, and then he shows the scene of the preacher jumping up and down, and then he says, and this is what our preacher did whenever he was baptized. Just nailed me right through the heart of, we got passionate about the wrong things sometimes. Sometimes we get passionate about things that really won't matter 100 years from now. And then we come to church and we're so dead, we're so tired, we don't want to be here, but we come here because we have to. And we're not passionate about it. We wonder, why is the cause of Christ not growing? I'm telling you guys that people are not drawn to boring people, sad people, not any, no difference in what they feel. They are drawn to passionate people. They are drawn to people that, hey, I want to be around them because they are exciting. They encourage me. They build me up. They make me happy to be alive. And if we're not fired up about what we're doing, how can we expect anyone else to be excited about following what we're trying to tell them? Jesus had great passion, and in our churches, we need to restore that spirit of passion about what we're doing. Get excited about what we are about. Now, let's be honest, we're really not known for that. When people think about the Church of Christ in our town, it's not the most fired up people that they think of, really. They think of much less than that, sadly. I noticed it as a kid. Have you ever been to a Sunday evening service where there's not many people comparatively to Sunday morning? You've all been a part of that probably, right? You ever seen whenever the song leader says, you know, there's not many people here tonight. It would really help the singing if you guys would move down to the front pews. What's the reaction you get? You get looks like this of, how dare you ask me to move from my pew? You're going to have to come here and pick me up and move me because I'm not doing it. Why are we not passionate about that? Why are we not even willing to work to make the singing better, and yet we believe that we have the passion that Jesus asked us to have? I remember thinking this is crazy as a teenager. We can't even cooperate because of something so small. There's other ways that ministers have tried it. They always say the early church was so fired up about Jesus that they went into all the world. We would be downright thrilled if some of you could move down a few pews. That would be major progress in our church at some point, really. And I'm asking you, what is our deal? Why don't we have the passion that we need? Some preachers even get excited. Sometimes I've been guilty of this myself, of being excited when somebody gets mad, because at least there's some passion there to work with. They want something done. Because what would it take for us to be passionate about God? What would it take to join with Jesus and say, I don't even need supper tonight because I'm so excited about what God is doing here? To say, my food is to do the will of God who sent me. I'm reaching somebody that is different than me, that has problems and baggage that I don't know anything about. What is it going to take for us to have that kind of passion of, I want to be that church. I want to be the person that's reaching out to somebody. I know you got problems going on in your life. Let me try and help you by showing who can help you out. Many have wondered this question their whole life. Preachers try to get people fired up, and one of the ways is they will quote Romans 12 verse 11. You know, the Apostle Paul says it there, you are to be fervent in spirit, always serving the Lord. So they'd quote this passage and they'd say, you've been commanded to get fired up, so get fired up. Tell me today, do you feel that happening because of reading that scripture? Neither did they. It just didn't quite work. Then the next level works a bit better, and that's to say, you either get ready or get fired up for Jesus now, or you will later. One way or another, there will be fire. It gets them scared of hell and works for a few weeks, but it doesn't last. What would it take for us to have the kind of passion that Jesus had for his mission? And I saw it one day when reading through this story of the woman at the well in verse 34, where Jesus said, my food is to do the will of him who sent me. And I saw the key in verse 35. Jesus looked at his disciples and said this, do not say 4 more months and then the harvest. I tell you, the fields are ripe in the harvest now. Our first key word is what? Passion, right? Our next key word is vision. Understand this, Jesus had great passion because Jesus had great vision. What fed Jesus' passion is he could see what his disciples couldn't see. All they're thinking is, Jesus, let's get through the Samaria so that we can get to the people that matter. And honestly, they were worried about, man, these are some messed up people. We don't want to be associated with these people. What are we doing stopping here? Most Jews are just going around it. We went straight through it. What purpose could there be of being here? And Jesus, now you're talking to this woman, is going to kill your reputation of being a teacher, a reputable teacher. And now look at all these people that she's bringing from town. I mean, Jesus, come on, get with the program. And Jesus is kind of pointing and saying, look, this is your guy's problem. You don't see what I see. I see the fields are ripe in the harvest now. I see people that are hungry for what they know they're missing. They have a God-shaped hole in their heart saying is, I know something's supposed to fit in here, and I haven't found it yet. We see people who are hungry for God. And so to the church today, if we want to have an incredible passion for God, we've got to have a great vision of what God has in store for us. If we are going to be a church that reaches people, if we are going to be a church that is evangelistic, an evangelistic church, if we are going to have a church that impacts our community, if we are going to be a church that makes a difference at all, then it will never happen until we can first see it happen. Until we can see that the fields are ripe in the harvest now. Until we can see that God could accomplish this through us. Until we reach that point, it's not going to happen. It's never going to happen until we can see it happen. It's not going to happen just because we meet together and we equip one another for what we need to do, and we make each other feel a little bit more guilty about what we're not doing. It's not even going to happen because we have classes that equip us and get us ready to go out, as wonderful as that is. If we don't have that passion, that vision, we're not going to have that drive to go out and use what we learned. It's going to happen when we catch this vision and belief that God can do it through us. So I want to challenge us that we need to get a hold of this vision. Where does it start? It starts with an incredible vision of God. Everything in people's lives changes when they come in contact with seeing God, knowing who God is. When they notice, when they see the presence of God, they come away shook up. They fall down. They beg God to leave them. They are struck blind. They can't walk, different things like that. It starts by, first of all, seeing God and being shook up to our core. Reminds me of a story in Kansas City. There was a new film going on there by Paul Newman. I don't know if you know him or not. One time while he was there filming, there was a local lady who went to an ice cream shop. And once she ordered her ice cream, the girl behind the counter was getting it for her. She turned around and guess who walked in? Paul Newman. And she saw his beautiful blue eyes and her knees started to buckle and she paid for a cone and then she got out of there. She couldn't believe that she had met Paul Newman, but then she got out to the sidewalk and she realized, I don't have my ice cream cone. And so she walks back into the store, and while she's walking out, Paul Newman is walking out, and she's walking in, and their eyes catch, and he actually speaks to her. And he says to her, are you looking for your ice cream cone? And she says, yes. And he says, it's in your purse with your change. This woman is truly shook up, and that's the kind of shook up we need to, or we'll find whenever we see God finally. We need to find God so much that we are shook up, that we, whenever we have seen God, our lives are changed because of it. Our actions are changed. Our daily routine is forever changed. We got to see how great God is, how powerful God is, how loving God is, how graceful God is. We've got to see God's heart, who God is. And when we begin to have that great vision, it gives us passion for people. Passion to say, you know what, I'm not comfortable with talking to people, but because of what Jesus has done for me, I feel that I can no longer stand on the side and say that I don't want to talk to people. I've got to do this, even if I don't want to because of who I am. Because when we begin to see God's heart, we begin to look at the world as Jesus saw it. When Jesus looked around, what he saw is what God could do with this church, with his church. I want to challenge you to ask this question. God, if you could come down here and do whatever you wanted with your church, what would you do? If you could just split this place wide open and descend among us, what would you have us do? What would you have us change? What would you have us do differently? What we need are some people who are going to not be critical, not be negative, but go and ask this question. What would God have happen here? If in our congregation God could have it any way he wanted and do whatever he wanted to do, what vision would he give us? I love George Bernard Shaw's quote, "Some people see things as they are and they ask why. I see things as they are not and I ask why not." Now we need some loving, positive, and encouraging people in our church that are going to stand up and say, why not? Why not go out and talk to people? Why not try and reach out to somebody that I may not feel comfortable with, but Jesus is more important than my comfort level? This is what God expects, to listen to what happens in this book that we call the Bible. And I'm telling you, we need some folks that are once again going to raise the standard and say, what was it like? What did Jesus dream about? Who did Jesus reach? What kind of impact did he have? What was it like in the early church? And say, you know what? That's what we want to try and aim to be. What happens when we catch this vision? I think there's a few things that are going to happen. I think one of them is going to start with honesty. This one story circulated among public relations. The London Transit Authority, or authorities bus company, they had a problem in London, and that is that the buses were not stopping to pick up people. Buses were just running right past their stops, and finally people got so upset that they went and there was a big outcry about it. And this is a true story. The London Transit Bus Company released this infamous statement: "We cannot run our buses on time if we are always having to stop and pick up people." I'm sorry, but isn't that what it was about? And guys, here's what's happening. In our churches, we've gotten concerned about so many things, but the one thing that Jesus wants us to do of going out and telling people about him, we've kind of let get lost in the shuffle, which is to go into all the world. We're supposed to be doing that. We're supposed to be concerned about we've gotten concerned about who's happy and who's not happy, what color's here and what color's there. We worry about what worship style and what not worship style we're supposed to have. when the thing that Jesus wanted us to see and do is we need to be out there loving God and loving people as God wants us to love. And sometimes we can honestly be truthful with ourselves is that's what's lost in the shuffle. There's going to be a few things that's going to happen whenever we catch the vision of God. Number one is it's going to drive us to our knees. It's going to drive us to pray. When we catch a vision that's bigger than we can do, we start talking about doing stuff that we cannot do under our own power, our own ingenuity, our own planning. When we catch a large enough vision, it's going to drive us to our knees to say, God, we can't do this. We need you. It's going to make us have to pray to God in such a way that we may not have ever experienced before sometimes. Number two, it will force us to change. I know change is a bit of a scary topic, but I'm not talking about change in the gospel. That's unchangeable. But I do think that we need to listen to the Apostle Paul, 1 Corinthians chapter 9. He gives us this great strategy where he says, I become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. Well, what are you saying, Paul? Are you saying that you need to change the gospel? Absolutely not. What are you saying? I change methods, I change strategies, I change styles. Why do you do it? I want to reach as many people as possible. I'm not talking about just trying to be the weird church down the street. Change that will help us to reach people, to tell them about Jesus, that kind of change. And then number three, when we catch this vision, it will unify us. I'm saying in our church, the infamous statement of, I don't want to change, I don't want to do something because I just don't want to, is to say, that makes me feel uncomfortable. That's how you stop anything in its tracks in the church today. Oftentimes it's just saying, well, that makes me uncomfortable, and it halts, comes to a halt. Please listen to me. That's the problem of why we are divided as we are, as we're thinking is, it's about what I want. It's about what I want to be comfortable, to be happy. When it's not about us, it's about God. The major issue of our church has become what makes us comfortable and what makes us uncomfortable, what you like and what I like, but we will never achieve unity this way. But if we get a vision that's bigger than us, that takes the focus off of self and puts it onto God, a mission that says, you know what, it's not so important what you or I like, it's what God has told us to do. It's not what makes you comfortable or makes you uncomfortable, but it's about what's important, what God says is important. That will unify us. Not trying to debate everything that comes down the pike of, well, do we want this? Do we not want this? But remembering is God is the most important thing. It makes those other arguments insignificant to argue about. I think about the words of Jesus in Mark chapter 9. Jesus told them the harvest is plentiful. People know about Jesus, but most of the time, likely the reason they know about Jesus is they have some skewed idea. They haven't read the Bible to hear what he actually says. And they have this skewed and twisted idea about what the church is like, what the church is about. But people are hurting. People are waiting for the thing that can fulfill them, that can give them real meaning, the way that they were created to be. And that only thing is God. God created us. God knows what will give us that fulfillment that we're always seeking. And he says, it's in me. It's in following me. I tell you, the harvest is plentiful. What we need is more harvesters, people who are willing to go out and to seek out those Christians, those not yet Christians, and tell them about Jesus. I want to blow your mind for a second and turn back to John chapter 4. I want you to see who caught Jesus' vision here. It's amazing when you finish the story. Verse 39, many of the Samaritan people believed in him, Jesus, because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. And because of her words, many more became believers. They said to the woman, we no longer believe just because of what you said. Now we believe because we've heard for ourselves and we know that this man really is the Savior of the world. Now, if you read your New Testament closely, guess who the first missionary was? This woman. She's a woman. She's viewed as a half-breed Samaritan. She's divorced 5 times. She was ostracized by her own people. She was living with a man who was not her husband, hiding from everyone when we first meet her at the beginning of this story. And she was the first missionary to reach out and tell people about Jesus. You need to, or she's saying, you guys know about my reputation. He knows more. You need to hear about him. Isn't it amazing that God can use this woman with her baggage? If God can use this woman, could he use you? Who's going to catch the vision? Who's going to leave this place saying, I'm telling you, my food is to do the will of God, to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. And I love the story of the late, great Steve Jobs. When he started Apple Computer, it wasn't going really well. He couldn't sell his product. And despite the fact that it was an amazing product, he couldn't sell it. So he decided, I'm a good inventor, but I'm not a good marketer. So he went to John Sculley, who was the president of Pepsi. And for the first time in history, Pepsi had outsold Coke. So Steve Jobs goes to him and asks to hire him at Apple Computer. And Sculley laughs. Nobody had even heard of Apple Computer up to this point. And Steve Jobs went to him and said, I want you to come and work for us. He said, no way. He said, I'll give you an incredible financial package. He turned it down. He said, I'll give you a yacht. He turned it down. And finally, Steve Jobs went to him and asked him this question. He said, sir, do you want to continue spending the rest of your life selling sugared water, or do you want a chance to change the world? What a question, right? He had chose to change the world, and the rest is history. I'm teaching on an iPad, so apparently history was made. I ask you today, are you sick and tired of selling sugared water, the sugared water of Christianity, the watered-down version, and you want the chance to be giving living water? Are our churches sick and tired of the knick-knack arguments that go nowhere? Are we sick and tired of arguing about things that don't matter? Are we ready to do something that could change the world, change this town completely? It started in this village with one woman that nobody thought anyone would ever pick. Catch the vision. Let's ignite the passion. Wouldn't it be great if in a few years, maybe a bit longer, people look back and say, this is where it started. This is where the change began. If you want us to pray for you because of something going on in your life, if you want to be that person and your life has not been had the passion that you see God needs for you to have, and you want the church to pray for you, to encourage you, to have that passion for God again, or if you want to join this mission for the first time, will you come forward as we stand and sing?